pale horse. The man who sat on him was death. And hell followed with him.
You're killing me, man.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Declarations of War. I am your host, Alexei Avkard, joined tonight by a full house of hosts. We've got Andy Astronaut.
How's it going?
Artemis Albosa.
Howdy.
And Levitain.
G'day, g'day, g'day.
And we're all back together. Feels good. We also have an absolutely special guest for the show. I feel a bit starstruck because I've been following her content quite closely for the past couple weeks. Notable Eve YouTuber, Frosty's OP.
Hello, hello. Thank you very much.
Frost, I've been so excited to have you. Your content, at least from my perspective, it sort of came out of nowhere, and then you become one of the hottest Eve news coverage folks, like especially for war coverage. A lot of people are looking at you. I think you've got some of the best produced content on the subject. How did this all start for you? What got you into Eve in the first place?
So I'll make it a brief synopsis because I kind of bounced all over the place. But I started playing Eve, I think, in New Year's Eve 2013. Then I spent like 2 years in like high sec, just kind of doing mission running and everything. Ended up in Provi, joined a corp, and I've been pretty much with that corp almost the whole way through. And then the corp has ended up in one point in Steinwagen in Catch, and then we got booted out by Test, ended up in Quirius. Then my corp moved over to the drone lands. Then we got involved with the whole drone coalition unit thing. Then I started FCing, ended up being a military leader as well for the alliance that I was in. And we fought Darkness, fought Triumvirate, got our ass kicked by Skill Yourself. And then I ended up in Fire Coalition for a little while. And then I was away from the game for a couple of years. And then I came back in October because my corp CEO said, you know, there's all this stuff happening in Delve. You really should be getting back into Eve. And so that's what I did. I came back in, and it was at the time of the Keepstars trying to anchor, Papi were trying to anchor Keepstars in NPC Delve.
Mm-hmm.
And basically there was on the fourth attempt, it was managed because of all these bubbles that are around the Keepstar. And one of the things that was coming up, I saw in Alliance chat and in various discussions on forums and things, people didn't seem to really kind of understand the strategy behind it and why it worked or why and what all the elements were. And I thought, you know what? I'll do a video on that because I was already doing YouTube videos on sci-fi gaming. And I did one video, and then people said, oh, you know, you should do another one because that was like, you know, we like the way you present it and stuff. And then 6 months later, here I am doing weekly war updates.
Now, had you been a YouTuber during the time you were away from Eve? Has that always been a passion of yours?
Yeah, I've been doing YouTube now for about a year and a half. So I think I started it in 2019. Yes, it was in September 2019. I was covering a game called Planetfall, which is like a strategy game, a turn-based strategy game. And so I just wanted to kind of build up, you know, something to do with sci-fi gaming. But I always avoided Eve because I wasn't playing it. And Eve is a scary thing to do any kind of videos on because, you know, the community is hardcore, and, you know, you make stupid mistakes or you make a silly mistake and you will get crucified for it. So, you know, I was my first video for Eve, I was petrified as to how it's going to be received because I know just how demanding the community can be.
Well, that is certainly true. They're pretty stickler. They're sticklers for accuracy, I would say. Like, if you say one wrong thing, you'll definitely hear about it in your comments.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say accuracy, Alec. I would say they're sticklers for what makes them look good. And they're very passionate if they're made to look bad.
Yeah. This has been the biggest challenge for me was being able to produce this and have people from both the Imperium and Papi say, I like your content. And the amount of precision I have to put into every word I say, because, you know, I don't want spin. It's not what interests me. But if I say something and I don't have the facts to back it up, then I will be seen as basically playing the propaganda of one side or the other. And so the hardest thing for me is always trying to maintain that separation. I mean, I do fly with Papi, but, you know, because of my background as having been like a military leader and fought as kind of a mainline FC, I look at the strategy, and the most important thing with strategy is never think your enemy is a fool. you know, assume that they know way more than you do and they're going to kick your ass, and you've got to think of every single possible outcome and allow and account for it. And so that's kind of the approach that I've taken with this war reporting.
How do you source your information? Because I notice, I mean, it's pretty obvious from your videos, once you get past the lead story, it's not just the big war news. You're also talking about conflicts that are happening sort of in the back lines, all these smaller alliances engaging in fights with one another. Who's got the military strength to hold this pocket, but their allies just dropped, so now maybe they don't. It seems like you've got a lot of nuanced understanding of some of the smaller players as well. How are you picking that up?
Okay, it's a mixture of two things. The first thing is I have my own Discord, and I have people in my Discord who just literally, they just link battle reports to me and just answer some basic questions as to what's going on. I don't deal in anything OPSEC. You know, everything I deal with is all public information. And, but the thing is that I have, I think, enough experience that I can look at a kill board and I can get an idea of kind of what's happening, you know, and I can see why, you know, let's say why a Dread Bomb are creating a Wrecking Crew are creating so much havoc in the southern regions, you know, why Deepwater Hooligans are able to kill Asbels on their own. And so it's more a case of being able to interpret data that's already there and then just obtaining a little bit of clarification when needed, you know, from people that, you know, are very, very kind and are willing to sort of just jump onto my Discord and say, oh, by the way, are you aware that stuff is happening in XYZ?
So with that, it sounds like you rely a lot on people just kind of being friendly and being able to give you kind of updates through your Discord and that kind of thing. But you talked about how you want to be very careful to keep it kind of balanced between both sides and not kind of be biased towards one or the other. Do you ever find it hard with like certain people giving you information that like you only get one side of the story, and like can you fill that out yourself, or like how do you go about making sure that you're not just getting kind of the one half that they want to share?
So quite often I only do get one side of the story, but I make sure that I only report on the information that is relevant to both sides. You know, so for example, you know, someone, you know, one of the big issues was that I had at one point was that, you know, the Imperium were turning around to me and saying, well, look, you know, catch is burning and you're not discussing it. And it's like, well, be specific. What do you mean by catch is burning? And they're going, oh, you know, Fortizars are dying everywhere. That's still not helping me, you know. And so what I now do is I go in and I check the Z kill for all the Fortizar kills, all the Asbels, the Satyrs, the Keepstars. And then, you know, I now look at each region and then draw the information that way. But it is difficult. I mean, for example, you know, I've been given for tomorrow's video, I've been given a really amazing kind of chart by the Imperium of all the structures that have died in Legacy space. And what I would really love is to have the peppy version of that, you know, but I don't have it. And so how I report on that is more a case of this has been given to me. This is the information that's been imparted. As far as I could tell, it's correct, but I can't be sure. But you know, here it is. Have a peruse. And these are the key elements that are worth noting in this document that was given to me. And you approach it that way, where you're just very up and about what you do know and where it's come from.
How do you balance your YouTuber production with your actual gameplay? Because you are actively fighting in the war itself, but clearly, with the amount of effort that go into your videos, it obviously takes a significant investment of time to put that together, to put the polish on it, to put it out and market it. And you don't just do e-videos either. How do you find the balance?
Well, at the moment, I am literally only just doing e-videos. I was only doing one a week. I'm now going to go up to two a week. But the key thing with the war updates is that it is literally just one solid day of work. Because there's no point in producing the video before the Monday, before the day it's released, because otherwise stuff will be out of date. So what I do is during the week, I make notes, and I make lots of notes, you know, about various bits of, you know, the information that is given to me. And then once it gets to Monday morning, then I open up my notes, and then I spend probably a good 4 hours at least kind of putting together everything into kind of some kind of order. And I'd now do it by region because that seems to work best. And then, you know, I just then go for it. But it's all done pretty much in one day. But the benefit is, and I don't think most people are aware of this, but I actually film in one take. You'll notice there's never any cuts in my video. because I haven't got time to do loads and loads of takes. So I just make sure I've got all the information that I need, and then I just go on and wing it. And if I stumble around, with my words a little bit and everything, I don't retake because it simply isn't the time. And then I try and keep the edit as straightforward as possible so that I can turn it around quickly.
Wow, that's brilliant.
How much time do you spend on the thumbnails, though? That looks like a serious number of hours put into Photoshop.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm not a solo team. There's also Niall. Niall is my housemate, and he's the graphic artist. And he will spend a good 2 or 3 hours generally on the thumbnails. And it's very much a joint creative process, you know, that he and I, I'll say, look, you know, this is the premise for it, you know, that the Imperium strikes back. So maybe we can give it a Star Wars theme, and we could perhaps have a lightsaber in there and like slicing an eye hub or whatever. And we bounce ideas backwards and forwards. And then he does the artwork and comes out with the final product. But thumbnails are so important in YouTube. And also I think the thing that's helped with the channel, you know, is I'm a visibly a person, you know, I'm, someone, you know, so that's why I'm always in the pictures, because it's, you have to create a personality. Otherwise you just end up with something that's just dry, I suppose. I mean, at the end of the day, it's entertainment, and it has to be produced with that in mind.
I did notice that pretty immediately when I started checking out your channel, beyond just the videos, started looking at your banner or what else you had in terms of content. You are very front and center. The channel is very vibrant. You kind of have a brand of, you know, it's around you, but also, you know, it's kind of high energy. I was able to pick that up pretty immediately, and I was fairly impressed with the amount of effort. It seems like a very,
thank you.
Almost like a studio produced level of photo shooting for some of your banner picks, especially.
Okay, well, my background is video production. Niall is my housemate and also my colleague, and we work in production. I specialize in the video, he specializes in photography. And so, you know, that is our background, that is our trade. And so we've applied a lot of it to obviously to the channel, but still not making it overproduced. You know, we want it to be slick, but not to the point where it becomes corporate and generic.
Mm-hmm. Where did is that an iguana, the thing in your...
Yeah, it's actually an anole. I lived in Martinique for a while, and they used to have these really cute lizards and got a little pointy nose. And so I wanted some kind of a little creature for the logo, and we decided to go with the anole, which is a little lizard.
Yeah, I used to keep them when I was a kid. They're great pets.
Yeah, they're so fast as well. And when I lived in, like I say, in the Caribbean, they were just everywhere. You know, you'd literally just be typing, you know, at your desk, and they'll just run across your keyboard and stuff. They're just amazing.
Oh, I'm going to be thinking about my pet animals when I was a wee child. Manly tears, audience, manly tears. Let's talk about your latest video. This will probably come out, hopefully tonight, fingers crossed, could come out tomorrow. I don't want you to like give away the game, but if the audience listens to this before they listen to your video, any highlights you want to share?
Well, for tomorrow, tomorrow is the war update. And really, the previous video kind of gives you a really good idea of where we're going, because the previous video was called The Long Grind. And right now, you know, what it's really about is just kicking over sandcastles. You know, that both sides are just trying to destroy as many structures as for each other as possible, create as many ISK losses as possible, whilst we all wait for 1DQ. And, you know, the thing I will be talking about a little bit tomorrow as well is impasse. I think it was impasse. Hang on, let me just bring it up. No, it was Fethibolis, where you've got IGC, you know, who are an alliance that I kind of talked about last week briefly, and I didn't know what was going on there. And I found out a lot more now, and it's quite interesting. So I'm going to be, you know, discussing that. And then, you know, it's now... you know, I'll be talking about where it goes from here, that this grind's going to continue for at least probably 2 to 3 weeks. And, you know, the Imperium are just going to sit tight during this time, that they have no need to do anything. You know, they just got to, the impetus is very much on Pappy and maintaining that forward momentum. And eventually they're going to run out of structures to kill, and then they're going to have to attack, you know, 1DQ. It's either that or they retreat. And I think that's where the Imperium is waiting at the moment. And but we shall see. You know, I don't make too many predictions, because that's the best way to be wrong. But I kind of, that's kind of the flow that we have seen for the last 3 or 4 months has been along those lines. And I would imagine that will be coming to head in 2 or 3 months time at the latest.
Well, we love making predictions on this show. Go for it.
The one thing, like, I had never heard of you or your channel before Alec, like, posted your channel link into the staff channel and said, hey, this is our guest for this week. And so I clicked on it, and the long grind was the video that you had most recently released. So that is the first video of yours that I had ever seen. And I think what I appreciated about it the most, in particular in context of the big war that's going on right now, World War B2, is that if you listen to TIS or if you listen to the various Imperium news outlets, etc., you will hear a lot about the Imperium and you will hear a lot about Pappy. But I think in order to fully understand everything that's going on, and more importantly, like, how it's happening, and that in turn determines the wild predictions you make about the future, you have to understand how all the third parties come into play. And that is what really impressed me about most particularly that long grind video, is that you had info on all of the third parties, and more importantly, like, a nuanced explanation of the role that they played in the destruction of all of Pappy's previous space. So that is something that was just like, it's not out there anyone else. No one else has this sort of information with this sort of production quality and is putting it together in a non-spin way. Like, sure, you could go over to INN and hear about how Catch is burning, but they're not going to tell you that it's third parties doing it. They're going to say it's Innit and Bastion. You could go over to TIS, or more specifically, like, Ron USMC, and hear that Delve is burning, but they're not going to tell you about how, like, what is motivating that, what's motivating the move into Delve and Quirius by Pappy forces. So it is very impressed.
I got a plus one that, because I think you touched on a key point. Whenever they say, oh, that their space is burning, they'll always tie it back to the major alliances. It kind of covers up what I think is actually happening there. They're not just burning the space. I mean, Innit and Bastion are definitely doing that, but that's not why Sav is dropping and changing hands. It's these smaller third-party alliances. They're coming in to take a piece of the pie. We're seeing a lot of smaller groups move in and start to establish themselves in this space that used to be occupied by legacy or legacy renters. So what we'll actually wind up with at the end of this is not blank space or space held by Initiative and Bastion. It'll be probably more like a Fight Club type thing with a bunch of small alliances each trying to carve out their own little area, their own little fiefdom out of legacy's corpse.
Yeah, the thing that has kind of really contributed to this is actually down to CCP. And I've now started a new series called Alliance Spotlight, you know, where I talk to individual alliances. And I was talking to Deepwater Hooligans for the first one. And they really pointed out something to me, which I really didn't think about at the time. And it's to do with the cores. That now, you know, you've got cores and structures. So structure bashing is totally a thing. If you've got, for example, you know, the situation where, you know, Legacy Coalition have moved a lot of their alliances out of a region and they've done it in a rush and they've left these structures behind. And basically Deepwater Hooligans are going, yeah, we'll kill all these structures because we get all the cores. And we're getting minted off the back of it. So they are actually, whilst, you know, Pappy and the Imperium are busy burning it left, right, and center, they're coming along and going, cheers, we're making loads of money. And so that's the thing that's also driving a lot of these third parties to come in, because it's easy money for them. You know, they just have to drop a couple of dreads on an Asvel, you know, and they're a few billion richer as a consequence. And then, you know, the other thing as well is that, you know, it makes sense for them to take Sov while they're there, because if nobody's attacking, you might as well just grab a couple of R64s, right? A couple of good moons and get yourself some moon goo as well. But there are some smaller alliances that are coming along, and one that's always been an interest to me has been Sorry in Advance, because those guys, a Canadian alliance, it wasn't formed that long ago, and just recently they went, oh, we're going to take Sov, and they just jumped into Quirius, you know, right in the middle of a war zone. And that kind of didn't really work out for them, you know, because it was the very time when Brave was deciding to try and get Sov in Quirius as well. But now they're over in Impasse, you know, and they've basically realized that Requiem Eternal or Eternal Requiem, whichever name you want to use, were kind of pulling out of Impasse, and they've kind of just got themselves a nice little constellation there, you know. And I think they've got themselves, you know, there's the thing as well with these third parties is that they don't have nits, you know, they don't have, you know, agreements written in stone and blood, but they do have an understanding, you know, of mutual work for a common goal for the time being. And, you know, they may not be here for long, but they're making the most of the situation as it is now.
I got to say, Sorry in Advance has the cutest Reddit recruitment posts of any of the ones. Have you seen those things? They're adorable. They're like extra polite Canadians.
Yeah, with the beavers, right? Yeah, that's excellent. The other thing as well with the third parties, obviously you've got Wrecking Crew, you know, who are down there, who just wanted to come down and attack Tess, basically. But also what I'm seeing and I find really interesting is kind of the reemergence of Stain Roos, you know, the old Stain Wagon, because obviously, you know, Stain Wagon were defeated by Test, I think it was back in 2017, the beginning of 2017. And, you know, whenever the Stain Wagon or the Stain Roos alliances, you know, get their ass kicked, they pull back into Stain, into NPC Stain and just rebuild. And yeah, last week I said Against All Authorities just came out of nowhere and started taking off. You know, you got Midas 22, you know, who are associated with Red, but you know, there's various groups now that are coming out, you know, and starting to retake Catch. So we may see, you know, that potentially the rebuilding of the coalition there. I don't know, but it's something to look out for.
I think that's quite exciting. It's been a while since they've emerged from Stain, so that'll be really interesting to see. Been many years, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I said, 2017, I think, was when we last saw them.
If that. It might have been even earlier. Crazy.
Obviously some bounced over to Fire Coalition and then have now bounced back, you know, right. Because that was the big ideal of Fire Coalition. So let's get all the Russian-speaking alliances together as one mega block. And whilst the ethos was right, the reality is that, you know, you've got too many really strong characters for that to happen. You know, there can only ever be one true leader of a coalition, right? And I think that was never destined to work as well as everyone wanted it to, and they ended up splitting up a bit again.
That's always been the story of the Russian bloc in EVE. It's like two or three different sides to it, and they just can never get on the same page for more than a couple of years.
At best,
yeah. And you had Solar, X-Death, that whole split happened. It's just been a kind of a recurring story. It's always interesting to watch from the outside because we don't speak Russian, so you kind of have to make some guesses about what's going on internally. But it's a high drama.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been sort of with DRF or Stroke XIX, and I was in Fire. And I tell you what, flying in Russian fleets is just the business. Those guys are just all in when they're in fleets. They party hard. They're fueled on vodka, and they go for it. They don't mess about. So their fleets are actually really good fun to be part of.
Before we move on and talk about what Noir's been up to and some of the highlights from the Wrecking Crew campaigns that we've been on, I wanted to double back to kind of predicting where this war is going to go next. No, you don't like to, Frost, but maybe it could just fuel our own speculations. I noticed TIS has been kind of leading with this tagline of Delve has fallen. It doesn't feel like Delve has fallen because they're fighting every day, and the Imperium is actually committing fleets to defend structures and soft timers. They're pushing back. They're burning Imperium or Legacy Space, excuse me. But I do think there are some concerning signs. They're losing a lot more of these fights, and they tend to be losing them at like 2-1 ISK ratios.
Okay, I can't really comment on that because I haven't seen personally from the fights that I've seen have been mostly fights of opportunity from the Imperium. You know, that they go off and they toast an iHub, you know, to create a timer. You know, but they haven't been contesting the Doom Clock's keep starts at all. You know, and they've not been committing any major forces, which to me is completely understandable. So to say Delve has fallen, you could say, yes, the majority of the structures in Delve have been taken out. But the reality is that, you know, Goonswarm only care about, or the Imperium to be precise, only care about that 1DQ constellation. Now they want to fight on their own terms. And they know that the situation, you know, right now is that for a super capital fleet, you know, which is where they really want to fight, you need to be in the defense situation where you have your Sinojammer in place, you have all your fleet in place, and you're in a position to hold that. And that one constellation they have one left is the most well defended in Eve. I mean, it's just insane the amount of structures that are in there. All the ADMs are at max. You know, they are just so well. You know, it is literally a fortress. You know, they call it Fortress Delve, and there's a good reason for that. You know, that breaking that is going to be so hard to do. And there was an attempt made by Pappy, I think, about a month ago, and they dropped behind 1DQ, and you know, they managed to get an Asbel anchored, and then they tried to kill the two Sinojammers so they could then go after the iHub. And the tie dye was so bad that by the time they killed the Sinojammers, they arrived at the iHub just a few seconds too late to start toasting it. And it literally came down just a few seconds, and the war may have been very, very different. But it's really high stakes, and neither side wants to commit at the wrong time. You know, that's the thing, right? It will come down to a fight where one side will lose so badly that it will be over. And neither one wants to take the risk of throwing that away on something silly. And so, you know, to say that either side is, you know, is winning is I think way too early at this stage. When one side's capital force is actually seriously diminished compared to the other, then you can say that one side has fallen. But until then, I think it's still, the jury's still out.
I do have two points to make. One is just sort of an aside, since we brought up TIS. Me personally, I've worked with TIS in the past. I think, honestly, right now they're producing the best content they ever have. But they made a comment, or rather they allowed Vili to make some comments to the effect of, while the supers were trapped in M2, the Imperium did not do what they could to maximize that opportunity. And I just wanted to push back on that sort of line of thinking for a moment and say that this is just a reskinned version of the not winning fast enough argument, which is complete bullcrap. So anybody who's sitting there in their armchairs thinking, yeah, Imperium didn't do their best, they could have won the war with us trapped in M2, but they're losers and they suck, and so they didn't do that, you're an idiot. Next up, yeah. I do want to – go ahead. Did you have a comment on that?
Yeah. The one thing I will say is I'm surprised that the Imperium didn't attack the backlines harder and stronger earlier. I think that would have been a really good, you know, action to take. Obviously, the initiative, you know, went out and started doing that, and then the Bastion ended up going over there as well. But I think hitting some of the keep chain, you know, the travel chain keep starts in for test, you know, would have got them pulling back and having to like have jump clones everywhere. And we saw how Brave were affected when they kind of got split between, you know, Quirius and Catch, and how that created so many problems for them. And I think the Imperium potentially would have had the opportunity to do that elsewhere, and they could have taken that. But I'm talking with the benefit of hindsight. And as to how exactly that could be done, I can't really say now without knowing all the facts. But I still think that there was an opportunity, but it was a long time ago that was a play. But in the last few months, I think they're playing it absolutely right. You know, they know that they can't fight, you know, Pappy outnumbered, because they are outnumbered, you know, when it comes to these big fights. And unless they're in a really strong defensive position, they can't do it. And you know, they when they do sound the horn, you know, they need to do it at a time when they know that they can get everybody in. And the best way with Goonswarm to do that is not to sound the horn every 2 days. You know, they do it once a month or once every 2 months, and they'll get, you know, 15,000 players, you know, show up if it's important enough.
Yeah, that point is exactly why I want to draw some nuance between saying like Delve has fallen and the Imperium is losing versus Delve has fallen and the Imperium has lost. I think the point that you made where the Imperium has a win condition, that win condition is they are heavily defended on their own home turf and they have their super capitals in play with all of the advantages that come with Sinojammers, compared to the myriad of Pappy win conditions of it's a subcap brawl, doom clocks, etc., etc. I think that is the reason you are not wrong if you're saying the Imperium is losing right now, because whether you like it or not, your space is burning to the ground. Granted, the same is happening for Pappy forces, but what Pappy is able to do for their line members is say, hey, our space is burning, but we're living in our new space now. We are conquering our new homes. You don't have that argument to make on the Imperium side. So while I can appreciate that the Imperium still has a win condition left, they can still win a fight or two per month. I don't think you can say by any means they're not losing this war when Pappy is winning fight after fight after fight after fight. But then, of course, the third parties come in back in Pappy's old space. How does that impact morale? How does that impact Pappy's ability to continue this grind? I think that's where things get a little muddy. But yeah, that's just a bit of a comment I wanted to make.
Yeah, you have to make a distinction as well between Pappy and Legacy, okay? Because you said, you know, Pappy's back lines are burning. They're not, because Pan Fam, Fire, you know, Fraternity, they're all doing fine. It is literally only Legacy that's basically being attacked. So, you know, it is not all of Pappy that it's having its back lines attacked. But in terms of the win conditions, the issue is that for Pappy, is that their win conditions requires that they invade 1DQ and defeat Goonswarm. You know, that means remove their super capital force so that they're no longer able to defend themselves. Whilst for the Imperium, it is literally, we just have to survive. That is their win condition. They just have to survive for as long as possible. So, you know, in terms of from Imperium, is that they're always winning as long as they're alive, right? While Pappy can only win if they achieve an objective. And so this is where the challenge lies, that Pappy has to constantly be winning objectives to be winning the war.
Yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, any other coalition, you could really just declare victory. But for a war this big, with the objective they've laid out, and with the way that Imperium has set up their defense, it really feels like they can't claim that the war is over and they've won unless 1DQ falls. It would be a massive spin to try to claim it otherwise, because it's been Imperium's defense strategy basically from the beginning in various phases. And Test has repeatedly said that this is a war of annihilation and expulsion. That's been a consistent line for over a year and a half. So to change it now would be a pretty big loss of face.
Yeah,
plus,
I agree.
Can they coexist if, in fact, Imperium still has that constellation? Like, how do you set up secure ratting and mining and everything for your members if they have, like, the best super cap staging as far as defenses-wise, and that's essentially in the heart of your space, in the back line of your space? It's not going to work.
Exactly. And also, you know, that if the Imperium isn't defeated and it becomes like a stalemate, you know, at the end of the day, Pappy is not Test and Legacy Coalition. Eventually Pantham, you know, Pandemic Horde will decide, you know, there's better frags to be had in Provi or up in Syndicate, you know, and they will bugger off and go for fights there. You know, Pantham may decide, you know what, we've got problems with Hardmox back at home or whatever, and they decide to move back and deal with that. You know, so if it's just basically Legacy Coalition left in Delve with the Imperium, then the Legacy have got a problem, right? Because the supercap fleet of the Imperium will be greater at that point. So it is a case of there is no turning back now. It has to plow on until, you know, there is an outcome.
Yeah, and this is why I think it's important to make the distinction between the war being won or lost and particular objectives being won or lost. Because I think right now you can say, yes, the war is not won or lost until the Imperium is out of 1DQ and out of Delve. But you also cannot say that the Imperium is winning fights by letting all of their structures die. Like they are winning anything right now. Yes, they haven't lost, but
they're losing. They are losing. Yeah. They have not lost.
It's strategy versus tactical, right? Yeah. Strategically, it is the right thing to do. Tactically, they're losing battles because Satias and Keepstars are dying, you know, at a huge rate. But then again, you know, on the Tappy side, at least, you know, the third parties are having a field day, like I say, with gathering loads of cores and making loads of is off the back of Legacy Coalition. So it's not a straightforward answer. And because you can see, I'm always trying to sort of sit on that fence, because that to me is the situation. That's why it's so interesting.
I will say, though, there, at least for me, there are some concerning signs for Imperium. And I want to give a quick shout out to Adriland Denenard of the new Talking and Stations news service. It's a mailing list that they've set up. It's fabulous. And he's been putting out daily updates with various battle reports and stuff. And I've been able to track the daily ebb and flow a little bit better than normal because of his work. And even in fights where they win the objective, say, I'm noticing Imperium tends to be losing a lot more in ships, usually 2-1. And with the scarcity era, that's not great. I don't know the size of the Imperium's war chests, but I do know they haven't really been able to get in good care bearing for quite a while now. So it can't be amazing. And to see them leaking ISK at a greater rate than test, and especially so often, that's not an awesome sign. I know ISK isn't nearly as important to EVE as it used to be, but it's still concerning.
It still plays a part, absolutely.
If they're going to make this last and survive the siege, they need to be a bit smarter, I think. Or I don't know what is driving it. That's the thing. I don't know if it's FC mistakes, if it's doctrine. Maybe they're just running slightly more expensive stuff. But whatever it is, they're eventually going to have to address that, because test, despite losing their backline, they are going to get more set up in Quirius, more set up in Delve. I don't think ISK making is going to be easy for either side, but test is certainly going to have more potential. And if they're losing ISK at a much lower rate than Imperium is going to have a hard time with the siege.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the fact that the ratcheting space is almost non-existent now, you know, is an issue, you know, in terms of doing it as a Goon Swarm member. You know, I understand that they potentially have other ways of doing it, whether it's wormholes, high sec, whatever. But the concern is like you say, let me rephrase that. It's, do they have enough funds, even if they were not able to rat? How long can they hold their siege for, and how long can they continue fighting for? And is that longer than Pappy can sit there trying to take that space? And it comes down to, you know, I don't have the answer to this, and I don't think either side has, which is why we have this war ongoing all the time, is no one knows quite how big the war chest is and quite what resources are available to both sides and how long they can keep fighting for.
I think the answer is, I think it will go on for quite a while. I mean, Dell has been Goon Swarm territory, Imperium territory, excuse me, for years. And they built the model which PanFam basically replicated when they moved to the Drone Lens. They set up a stage so that they had the maximum coverage for systems under an umbrella. Both sides will have access to incredible resources. You're right. There are some other entities that are going to get their kind of homelands torched a little bit. But ultimately, I don't think it's about the resources so much anymore. I think it's more about Thunderdome. One side has to win this.
Yeah, there's one other element which we haven't talked about, which is FCs. You know, you have to bear in mind as well that, you know, I'm concerned at the number of FCs that are available for the Imperium versus the number of FCs that are available towards on the Pappy side. You know, and, you know, you could, I've been there. You know, I fought wars as an FC for 18 months solid, and you just burn out, you know, and you just lose the will to do anything. And I think that is going to be the biggest problem for the Imperium is that, now, Pappy has, because it has so many alliances and all those alliances have FCs, you know, but it doesn't matter whether they're the best FCs or the worst, that they have FCs. They have the ability to constantly be able to put out fleets all the time. And I think that is something that is potentially an issue for the Imperium.
Well, let's take a break from talking about the war to talk about vacation, specifically Nora's vacation. We have had a rough couple contracts, as the listeners of the show will know from the previous episode, and we just needed a break. I felt really bad, like really, really bad, putting them through that last wormhole contract after the previous two were so grueling. It wound up working out great for us because we made back all of our SRP wallet and more with the loot from the third contract. But man, you could feel people were just not enthused. Like participation was definitely down. People were grumpy. So we needed a break. We took a break. I guess technically we're still on it, even though we're on a campaign. It's not a contract.
Alec, we're mercenaries. Our break is killing people.
Yes. And we have been. Well, you guys have been. I've been having PC problems. I'm not going to have tons to contribute to this section because I've barely been able to play for the past 2 or 3 weeks because of my graphics card, but it is finally fixed and I'm back in the game and fighting. We have been doing some tournaments stuff. So I don't know if we've talked about it, but we are putting a team in for the Anger Games and we've been practicing. So we've been running regular practices under Ovix, our team captain. He's been running essentially the network's competitive side. It's really the flagship tournament for that, but I'm pretty excited about it. I want us to be more involved in the competitive scene in EVE, and Ovix is really passionate about it. He's got a bright head on his shoulders, so giving him some responsibility and some funding and seeing where it goes. Hopefully we'll beat our record of never making it past the first round of anything.
Noble goal.
Noble goal. Arnos? No.
If we include like when we were in MC, didn't we make it into like the second weekend? Like we didn't go 0-2, did we?
Could have sworn we won a match. That's true. I forgot about that one. It's not good though, like in general.
No, it's not.
It's super hard though. It's such a different way of playing the game.
Did you ever do like AT type stuff in your old alliances, Frost?
We didn't take part, but we actually started practicing for it. And I am not the best small ship pilot by any means. And, it's just, like I said, it's just so hard. I don't think people just realize how convoluted it can get. And especially when you start doing all the theory crafting behind it as well, it's just insane how the big teams keep winning. You know, the skill set they have has to be admired there.
Yeah, and I'd say even if you're not that skilled in it, it is a very enjoyable experience to participate in it, to try your hand at the theory crafting, to run the tournament fleet. Like, I've FC'd a few. I did terribly, but I wouldn't trade the experience for the ISK back. Like, it was well worth it, I think. Anger Games, less prestigious than the Alliance tournament, which we're not getting this year. But, you know.
That may change that, right?
I sure hope so. I keep bringing it up, and a lot of other people keep bringing it up. Doesn't sound very hopeful, but
Elise Randolph is working for CCP now, so
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's true.
CCP Swift.
Should we throw some congratulations?
Yeah, I feel like it's deserved.
Yeah, it happened in between the show breaks, so we totally should. If you haven't heard, CCP has hired Elise Randolph, friend of the show and prior guest, helped roast me. We have a great relationship with Elise. He is long overdue for being hired by CCP. I figured it would have happened years ago.
See, that's the most hilarious part about this. I'm sorry I got to throw you under the bus, Andy. But when the announcement first came out, Andy accidentally linked an old troll Twitter account that was CCP Taylor Swift instead of the legit CCP Swift. That is like how long?
That's not Elise. Come on, like. I know why you think it might be because of Elise's Taylor Swift obsession, but that's not him. And then Harris is like, well, actually.
Yeah, I was like, I swear I heard it. I was like, I know it's happening. I'm like 99% sure. But yeah, I linked the wrong Twitter. I think it was I don't know if it was a troll one or if they like changed the name. I thought that was Elise's old one. But anyways, regardless, yeah, I was like, I think this is it. And it was definitely CCP Taylor Swift and not CCP Swift.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. And like I said, the Alliance tournament, if it's ever gonna return, then I think having a CCP Swift is probably one of the best chances we have of seeing it return.
Yeah, and then kind of the other thing we've been doing on vacation. So people have been doing a little bit of IS making, doing like the Abyssal trio frigs. So people have been doing that a little bit, making some ISK on the side. And then the part that I've been excited about is actually roaming. So we've been roaming not every night, but like a good 3-4 nights a week, sometimes more. And we've had some actually really good engagements, like probably better roaming than I've seen in a long time, which was kind of caught me off guard, but we had a couple great fights that I was really excited about.
So can I ask, I mean, when you go roaming, what do you use filaments or do you just like head for a particular region of New Eden?
We do a mix of filaments and using Thera. So for those that don't know, eScout has a great service where they have a shared bookmark folder. You can just click on it and online the folder, and it'll give you all the up-to-date bookmarks for Thera. And then Thera works, basically has more connections than normal wormholes, as well as having NPC stations in there. And so it's a great place to kind of, they even have a website. You can basically type in your current location, and you can figure out how close to the closest Therahole you are, and you can look through the connections it has and see if there's a region that has good activity. So a lot of times we'll kind of... Oh, go ahead, Alec.
That website and the shared bookmark folder that came with it have just revolutionized how, at least how I play the game. It's so convenient now to use Thera, and it's all thanks to Eve Scout.
Yeah, Eve Scout and the shared bookmark feature that came out, I guess, like a year ago or so. I don't know exactly when, but when they added the shared bookmark folders to Eve, that was kind of what made this possible. But anyways, yeah, so we just kind of check the Thera connections, see if there's a region that looks good, and if not, we just fill them in.
Speaking of Eve Scout, I want to give a shout out to their new leader, Katjese, the famous circumnavigator of Eve. Congratulations on your promotion.
Wow.
So I think it was Katja. Hopefully it's not somebody who has a name really close to theirs that is like super popular in Eve Scout, but I like never heard of them before. But
is that the Bear Grylls from like the Chief Scout or something? Maybe a concept over in the UK. I don't know.
Bear Grylls?
Yeah, probably a UKism. We'll move on from that.
No, Bear Grylls is like the Discovery Channel like survival dude drinking his own urine and stuff, right?
I was going to say that's what he's famous for, yes.
I don't quite get the connection with Katjese, though, I'm not going to lie, Wave.
I think he's like the mascot for the scouts, if you will. So it's almost like, you know, the best scout. Yeah.
I just wanted to double check myself real quick. It was Katja. I'm not crazy. I'm just old. But yeah, congrats, mate.
Segueing towards current events. So before we talk about, I think, where we've been going with Nuff, it probably is a worthwhile at least noting something that happened in Provi. And this, I've been a little bit away from the game, busy doing own stuff as well. And it's weird having come back and seeing AAA coming back. It's like zombies. I don't know. It's just very strange these days. Back in us in the RC thing, they made it's probably fair to say a fairly nice kind of smug post, if you will, of purging some snufflings, if you will. And a few weeks later, Snuff claimed to do the same in return. So a director from the Rogue Consortium went rogue and flipped a bunch of structures in Providence, including Fortizars, including, I think, with Faction Fortizar, and pulled some rigs off things. So caused a fair bit of inconvenience and kill timers.
Yeah, so to kind of follow up on that, one of the things we've been doing on break is kind of helping, at least a little bit, helping purge all these structures that were transferred.
Bit annoying. I know at least one of our members lost some stuff in build, which sucks, but that's the way it goes sometimes. Eve is all about trust. You can get away with doing a lot of things, being super close with your roles and stuff, but sometimes you have to take a risk and sometimes it doesn't pay off.
What was the background on that? Was it, you know, purely financial? Was it angst with another player? Was there a reason that can be discussed?
I think there's some of the information is not totally out there, not totally clear, but I think the basics are that Snuff is kind of gearing up for war with RC, which is kind of what we'll lead into next. And because of that, that's kind of, I think, what drove RC to try purging Snuff spies. And then that's also what kind of drove Snuff to kind of pull the trigger on one of their high-level spies.
This has been brewing for a while, though, really.
Yeah. So it's been brewing for a while. And again, we'll get into kind of the true fights with Snuff. But this was kind of the time to pull it was right before everything kind of kicked off with RC versus Snuff. And then the one thing I'd add to that, I don't have confirmation on it, but the one thing that was in the Snuff post about doing this was... So to be clear, they flipped the TRC structures. But one of the other things they did was they had roles to access the fuel bay and the fitting for a SOTO. And so they were able to strip the rigs and pull out the fuel for a SOTO, which is what killed a lot of the industry jobs, including some, what at least what they're implying is some large scale, probably like Titan or Super Manufacturing. So what was actually in build is not clear, but you can look at the system industry index and see when it spikes up, and that will tell you when some big jobs have started. So that's kind of, I think, what led them to do this.
Well, the snuff stuff is definitely gearing up. This is the campaign that we're on. Now, to be clear, Wrecking Crew, the Coalition, hasn't fully deployed to LoSec, but NARD decided to deploy to LoSec. I pulled the trigger on that because we didn't have a pending contract, and we had been on break for a little bit of time, and I felt it'd be helpful to get everybody together in the same spot. And it has not disappointed so far. We have been fighting in Haematar and Derelik, I believe, are the two regions where this is mostly concentrated. There might be a few side regions where stuff is going on, too.
Is it not Devoid?
Is it Devoid?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Some Marred Losek region.
But Derelik's Haematar. Come on, dude.
And things have been pretty spicy, I'd have to say. We've been doing some fights on, I think it was defensive Keepstar fight that didn't actually materialize, and we've been doing offensive fights against Snuff Fortizars in the Amamake area. It's not okay. Actually in Amamake.
With the Keepstar thing, I am 100% out of the loop. What happened?
Oh, so there's been actually a couple different fights that are all on the same Keepstar grid. So there's a Keepstar in CCD, which is owned by Siege Green, which is kind of sort of, I think, loosely part of RC. And so the first fight kicked off because Snuff anchored a Fortizar on the grid with the Keepstar. That Fortizar actually died. And that was, I think, a week ago or so. And then that was before kind of the next wave kicked off, which included, I think, anchoring another Fortizar on the keep grid, as well as RFing the Siege Green Keepstar.
And then did we save the Keepstar? Is it like pending a hall timer? Okay.
No, that's good.
Yeah. And then so that was yesterday, right? So. Yesterday
at 5 a.m.
So yesterday was just a full slog of, in the morning was, I think, the Keepstar defense, as well as the RFing the armor timer, right, for the Fortizar that's on grid with it.
Yeah, but that was later in the day. So there were a series of timers. In Pacific time, it was 5 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and then I think 3 p.m. So for the 5 a.m., I actually wound up staying up for it because I thought, oh, it's a Keepstar fight. It's definitely going to happen. So I stayed up. Didn't happen. Ugh. So I skipped the 10 a.m., and I think a lot of people skipped the 10 a.m. so they could be there for the two Fortizar timers, which are later. I think the 10 was like an Astra, I want to say. Astra or an Athanar, one of the two. I'm pretty sure it was an Astra.
Yeah, it was an Astra that was on grid with something, but I forget what.
The 40 fights were spicy as heck. I was on the carrier fleet. We were kind of on standby for the first bit as people were trying to reinforce the Fortizar a second time to push it to hold timer. The main fleet was Macarials with a secondary fleet of Kikimoras, and they were up against a pretty interesting strategy, which I wish we had a little more time to really go into, but Snuff had a mass of carriers on their Fortizar sending fighters out. And as the fighters would arrive, you would typically see fleets of Tech 1 frigates land to try to land suicide tackles on various Macarials to get them killed before the rest of the fleet would warp off and reposition. Typically Punishers, but sometimes mining frigates as well. You could just pop it on in there. Now, they would die en masse, but as they did, you know, they would take Macarials with them, and that is a very good trade isk-wise.
Yeah, so just to kind of be clear, the way their strategy or like the Snuff strategy is working is basically they throw a Fortizar or some kind of anchorable structure on grid with whatever they're trying to kill. Then they just drop mass carriers, like probably 80 or so carriers.
I think it was over 100.
Yeah, so like 100 carriers, and then you just have mass fighter waves, and just no Logi will hold under that. Like it's just, you can't do anything about it, essentially. The only thing you can do is defang fighters or accept that you're losing stuff. And so then the defense to that is basically SS fighters at range if there's a blue structure nearby, or what we did, which is Macarials kind of bouncing around grid and keeping the timer paused while things were defanged and fighters were killed. And so it's kind of a clever strategy because the carriers are actually pretty safe, because essentially what can happen is, like, if things go south, you just abandon your fighters. And then as soon as your 1 minute timer is up, you tether again on the fort, or you can dock up on the fort. So by having a fort and just having all your carriers on grid, you can drop facts if you need to, and just keep things alive until their timer's up and they can dock.
Plus, I mean, even if you have tons of facts, jumping on a fort grid is pretty scary. Those things have a lot of teeth.
As you say, it is literally trading fighters from Macarios, but they'll make that trade all day long. And the other thing to kind of point out is the new signal suppressor, which replaced the target spectrum breaker, is another tool in defense of the battleships now, because by reducing your SIG, you can reduce the fighter DPS. But as you say, 80 to 100 waves of fighters, they'll outfit any battleship with the right circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, you heard it on comms, FC's repeating the instructions, like, as soon as you start to take fighter damage, signal suppressor and warp, signal suppressor and warp. But the kill mail still kept coming. The amount of alpha coming off that many fighters at the same time, it's just overwhelming.
Yeah, and that's another kind of strategy thing to point out. So at least in the first fight, kind of the strategy was to always just stay aligned to, we'd have like an interceptor on grid somewhere, and you could just align to the interceptor. The second you start taking damage, that one single battleship will warp off, and then that lets you kind of sustain damage for longer onto the Fortizar or fighters or whatever you're shooting, but keeps people safe because, again, like, Logi's not going to catch. And that's kind of where we saw the evolution of them using these, like, T1 Punishers that are just double plate scram fit, that they would warp on top to pin things down so that that strategy would no longer work.
So let's talk about final outcomes. So the carrier fleet that I was on eventually went from standby to jumping into another system to reinforce Snuff's Fortizar. They had two. That was reinforced without incident. I was a little disappointed. Not that I wanted, like, coalition mates to lose ships, but I was kind of looking forward to using my capital ship against in, like, a big fight, but it didn't happen. Maybe next time. I got a sense that, like, both sides were kind of leaving the powder dry in terms of the real big guns, because the hull timers are going to be coming. Both Fortizars were RF'd. Both of them are coming out on Tuesday. The Butcher's bill was pretty high. I don't know the exact numbers in front of me, but we lost a lot of max. But, you know, I was thinking through this issue and this problem in the sense of strategy problem. Whenever you're going up against a structure like that, against an alliance like Snuff, which is large and talented, regardless of what you might think about their tactics or morality, they got a lot of skill and skills. You're going to take losses, a lot of them. It's kind of the price you're paying to eject that structure from the area. So was it more expensive than maybe it had to be? I don't know. Could have been. You could argue that maybe not using a faction battleship would have been better. But at the same time, if you start to downgrade your fleet, then you look a lot more engageable and stoppable to a Snuffle. So I think using Max, probably a good call. I know we had a lot of them sourced, so it was what we were ready for. They went with what they knew. At the end of the day, they feel like it's worth it. So I don't know, it's just interesting because it's different than how we play, right? Which is where if you lose even one or two ships, it's too many. But there's no way around losing ships on a structure like that.
Yeah, I did find the battle report for it, and it looks like we lost 54, almost 55 bill, and Snuff lost about 14 and a half bill. So
yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, pretty heavy losses on our side for, you know, pushing the structure into a hole.
Is that just for the fighters? I mean, I think the kill mail only lists one fighter, is that right?
Yep.
Yeah, so that is also part of it. Actually, I think that the BRs now, it looks like they account for it. It used to be that so for individual kill mails, it only counts the cost of one fighter in the flight, I believe. Pretty sure that the BR, yeah. But the way the BR works, it actually adjusts for that and gives you the proper price, I believe.
I mean, it's very similar to what Snow strategy is. For years, they've been kind of just creeping through low sec, kind of displacing alliances. So Shadow Cartel got kicked out of Cisade. The only reason C-Tree didn't get kicked out is because they are primarily AUTZ, so their time zone is at Snuff's weakest, and they've got a sizable fleet themselves, so that Keepstar never fell. In terms of Snuff strategies itself, Wrecking Crew, we all think long and hard about dropping the bigger toys because Snuff have a very big pile of big toys themselves. And that's generally their tactic, is to drop, is to go, is to one-up you.
Yeah, and I think that's the one kind of thing I'd add to this too, is this was kind of a everyone versus Snuff type thing. So like you said, Shadow Cartel got displaced. They joined in on this. Siege Green was there. Dock Workers was there. Freight Train, which is part of RC, and the rest of the RC groups. So yeah, there was a lot of people versus Snuff, essentially, because of all the enemies they've made.
All right, we're going to try to wrap the show. Now, if you've been following the dev blogs, you know there was a pretty interesting, important blog that got put out about industry changes. If you're following this podcast for discussions about industry, I don't know that you're in the right neighborhood, but no, we do want to talk about it.
They're in the best neighborhood.
Yeah, you're going to have to clarify for me, because I read it and I saw this spreadsheet that's like 12 pages long, and it's like, it means nothing to me because I didn't know what the figures were beforehand.
Frost, so, yeah, you will fit in perfectly. This is exactly what we need for opinions on these industry changes. So here's what we're going to do. We need a one-line hot take, no takesy-backsies. This is your penultimate, no, that's the wrong term. This is the ultimate conclusion about these industry changes. One line, let's have it, starting with Alec.
I need to know if my battleships are going to cost more or less. It sounds like more.
I like it. Andy, you're up next.
I'm interested but concerned.
Okay, Lave?
Oh my god, make it stop, make it stop, make it stop.
Frost?
Should I hold on to my super and sell it in a few weeks' time? Because it looks like they're going to be more expensive, correct?
All of you guys keep asking questions with these one-liners, so I'm going to, I'll take it. I'll take the bullet, okay? Here is my hot take. Best industry changes ever.
Oh.
There you go.
It's a very bold statement.
Well, we're going to get into it a little bit more in the next show. We're going to go try to source an industry expert that we can actually talk about with these changes in depth and figure out what everything means. In the meantime, we're going to go with Artemis's tagline that they're like the best change that Eve's ever done. And we'll see you guys in the comments section. host highlights. Mine is super quick. Fixing my graphics card driver. I was literally about to go buy a new one before I couldn't find any, because apparently they're not being made right now with the pandemic. But I was ready to drop like $500 on a new card, at least $500, maybe even $750. Somehow I managed to figure it out after like 2 weeks of uninstalling, reinstalling drivers, adjusting settings, trying to pour through error logs, etc. I couldn't figure out why my graphics card kept crashing after trying to play Eve. And for a while it was crashing just without playing Eve, just as soon as I started up the computer. But it's been stable for a couple of days now. I've even loaded the Eve clients and they've been fine. So I don't know what I did differently with the last driver install, but whatever it was, it seems to have worked. So saved a bunch of money and I'm back in the game playing, and boy, did I miss it. Andy?
Okay. Real quick, can I go before you, Andy?
Yeah,
I want to dovetail off Alex. I'm changing my highlight. Alec, I can completely empathize with you because I was also looking to upgrade my girlfriend's PC, could not find a graphics card, and ended up buying a pre-built PC because it was the only way I could find to get one of the new RTX 30 series cards without paying like $2,000. So I just bought a completely new PC instead of just for the graphics card.
I was seriously considering it, Artemis. I really was, to the point where I searched them on Amazon. I'm like, well, I wonder if I could get it this way.
All right, Andy, sorry about that. You're up.
All right. Well, my highlight is actually Eve related. But like I said, we've been kind of roaming since we've had a break, actually roaming a lot. And so after one of the Noir Academy classes, we went out for a roam, and it actually ended up turning out really good. We got a really good fight with Black Rose, which is a group kind of in Scalding Pass. Ended up like coming out way positive. But part of it was because there was a bomber that ended up being like 200 mil. Turns out it had a Fed Navy warp disruptor fit to it. And when we looked, we got super excited and we're like, oh yeah, we can totally scoop that. And then there we go. We just paid for our roam. One of our Academy pilots, I won't name and shame him, but was really excited when he was trying to catch the pod and accidentally shot the wreck, including killing the offending UR disruptor. So we give him a bunch of shit for the rest of the roam, but he actually made up for it quite handily. He got like 5 kill marks on his Navy Osprey, and he actually ended up getting out of a pretty sticky situation. He fragged some tackle and warped off and played it just about perfectly. So shout outs to him. It was a super fun roam, and yeah, it was good, despite losing the Fed Navy point.
It's good to be back in EVE. I mean, and from my shout out, I mean, I've just not been active, but good news, second vaccine done, jabbing lots of other people more, and we're continuing to kick COVID in the balls.
Woo-woo! Congrats.
Frost, how about you?
Okay, for me, my highlight is managing to not warp the wrong ship while multi-boxing. I'm normally running like 3 or 4 teams at once, and I went through a phase of constantly warping the wrong ship. Not my caps, not my supers or anything, thankfully, but normally the FC would go, oh, go and check this node out. And instead of warping my scepter, I'd warp off the Lynx ship, and I kept doing it, and I managed to get that under control now. So that's my highlight.
Pro tip, I like to color code my clients. So if you go to the escape menu, like one of them is yellow, one of them is red, one of them is white, and one of them is blue.
Yeah, I will take all the tips. I have them in the right in a certain order on Evo Preview, and I have them, you know, always stacked in the right way. But, you know, when you're under pressure, you know, especially when you've got an FC that's quite demanding, you know, you kind of thought, oh, I've got to do it. And suddenly you've hit warp and you're panicking.
Yeah. I mean, a Lynx ship is a better scout than a scepter any day anyway. So who really cares?
Yeah, if it's a Loki or a Tengu, then definitely.
I just want to give a quick shout out to Dal, Dal Flatio. He is one of our top EU FCs and top EU solo pilots, which is rare that they're both the same person. I want to give him a shout out because he's not shy about speaking his mind, and you know, he gave me some warnings ahead of taking those wormhole contracts that, you know, in hindsight I probably should have listened to more seriously, but. You know, they were contracts we had done before without problems. I thought we'd be okay this time around. And there were definitely things we could have done better and probably would have done better. But in general, they were like just really shit jobs, very tough for us. We need to get bigger to be able to handle them. So I do want to give him a shout out. I also want to thank him for being forgiving of me when I don't listen to his good advice.
I think that's one thing I like about all of Noir is we have a pretty vocal group that's not afraid to speak their mind, which I think is a good thing.
For a minute, though, I thought you were going to say we're all going to give Alex shit.
We can do that, too.
It's a roast every day.
Sometimes it feels that way. I'm kidding. Andy, go for it.
Yeah, so my shout out is to Stitch Gainland. He does some YouTube videos as well, fairly small, but he does a lot of kind of solo vids and like engageable PvP type stuff, as well as kind of balance kind of suggestion type stuff. And he just came out with a video, I think today or last night, that's a brawling NATO. So I'm not actually done watching the video. I'm like halfway through, but so far it looks really good.
Super interested in that because I've been messing around with the tornado in EFT a lot lately, or Pipha, I guess, just to see if it can do anything interesting other than the usual artillery stuff. So I'm going to be watching this video with great interest.
Yeah, so this is a AB autocannon fit with double web scram, and you basically scram kite with it, and people just underestimate you, and you end up just nuking them. So yeah, definitely not the RD snipe at 100 kilometer fit.
Neat. Leave.
I think it's great to see that low sec is more active these days. I mean, I must absolutely be honest and say it's glorious to watch people shooting snuff, and all power to them, but it's also great to see that low sec is home to some nice big battles and some moves against the status quo.
And Frost, what's your shout out?
Okay, definitely all the viewers who are watching my vids and giving me thumbs up and everything, my Discord members for really helping me build content, and all of you guys for inviting me on your show. You're all lovely.
Well, it was wonderful to have you, Frost. This was great. Keep making these videos. They're fantastic, and I'm sure we're going to be referencing them a lot in the coming weeks and months as this Delve War comes to its conclusion, Possibly, indeed. Maybe. On the one hand, I want it to go forever, but on the other hand, I'm like, just hit 1DQ already. Come on. I want to see it.
Yeah, like, we need another big fight.
Yeah. All right, guys, that's it. Head to decorationsaboard.com to participate in the show poll for this one. Noir is recruiting once again. If you've made it to the end of this broadcast, you're probably dedicated enough to join the corp. Join CafeNoir.in-game for more info. You can also find a link to our Discord there. And I also encourage you to check out Frost YouTube at youtube.com/FrostEesOP. That's /FrostEesOP. Wherever you are, whoever you're flying with. Good hunting, listeners.